Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, my listening audience. You wonderful people who do not accept disease, you do not accept death unless it's time for you to go, and that's under control of the men in charge. This show is dedicated to you. This show is dedicated to the people around you, particularly the people around you who love you and who find at these perilous times in their life's journey that a loved one is suffering. Doctors go through this. Doctors go through this as much as anybody, because doctors have a commitment with their patients, and that commitment is to keep you healthy, or if you come to them in times of grief, to take you out of it emotionally, physiologically, so on and so forth. So doctors, and many authentic doctors are out there, really get in touch with their patients. As always, and this is a theme in my show, the problem is education. Can you weather the storm psychically, spiritually, when your life is just running along just fine, often without a worry, and bada boom, on your doorstep is the beginning of an illness, and you begin that crazy spin and your world stops. And this supposed detour, which is not a detour, it's really the beginning of a transformation, of a journey. So at the end of the show, as always, I'm going to have a good ending. But you see, along the way, there's lots of bumps. So this show, when we archive it, is on death, dying, and disease, and what you can do about it when it's you, to the extent that I can help you and give you perspective. Again, I'm not a theologian, but you got to understand this about doctors. Doctors are always facing questions that theologians face. Why do good people suffer? And everybody goes through that dark journey where they have to look up into the sky and ask if this suffering is a suffering designed by God or perhaps the devil. If you haven't considered that, then you're blessed. I don't know how to respond to that, but I can tell you that I know from my patients, many people ask themselves, has God just overlooked me? Am I just food for the dark energies? So doctors have to deal with this, because this is what your healings are made of. If you're fixated on how God looked over you, passed you over, and how you just got destroyed and screwed with a disease, that doctor's got a lot more work to do. Every now and then, not often, I'd say 1 in 10,000 come in and they say, I know that this illness is just to get me closer to God. They look at it that way. They understand they're going to go through some form of a transformation spiritually, physiologically, psychologically, structurally, in every single way, shape, and form. And they are ready to go. If I had 1,000 people like that, America would change. Not enough people see it that way. Not in the beginning. Tough to see it that way. But enough people through their journey, the ones that get to the other side, and this is the uncanny thing, when you get on the other side of something serious, you start to see how this was in the divine plan. So it's easy to understand this in the aftermath of it, when there's victory, when you have your health again, when you didn't get that organ cut out that they told you was going to have to be cut out. It's a big, important part of you that you are not missing because you fought the fight, the good fight. But we're going to go deeper than that today. We're going to go more deeply because we're going to go into terminal illness. This is when you are going. And it doesn't appear that there's any viable choice except to just take the ride. All right. In your daily experience, occasionally you run into a person that you have enough relationship with, enough good times with, that finds themselves in quite a pickle. They get a diagnosis, and that diagnosis is bad or terminal. And you can't run away. You work with them. They're your neighbors. They're in your family. People generally do what common sense dictates. They kind of, if they can, move away from the person when they get sick. But I'm talking about that situation where you can't. You can't get away. You have to deal. The first thing people do, the first mistake they make, and again, this show is never about dogma, so there's no rules. You do what you think is best at your discretion. This is for guidelines. But working with lots of people who are ill, I can tell you the last thing they want you to do is pity them. They don't want you to point out that their gait has changed, that their speech has changed, that their eyeballs are moving indifferent, that they look white or green. They don't want to feel that sympathy. They want you to laugh. They want you to be you. They want you to come from the very best part of yourself, because we all have these two selves. We have the high self and we have the low self. And in everyday relationship, whether it's in the family, in the community, or at work, the high self and the low self are constantly vying with each other for which one's going to express, depending on the circumstance. The part of you that's closer to God, the part of you that's further away from God. Yes, we have both sides operating dynamically, in dynamic flux at all times. And so really, what relationship is about with sick people is holding space. Sick or dying, chronically ill. I'm not talking about the two-week flu. I'm talking about chronically ill, stuff that doesn't go away, that may never go away, and that if it goes away, pack a lunch, because this is World War III. And then I'm talking about the terminally ill. They're asking you to hold space. They don't know that. They're not going to tell you what your role is, because they don't know, because they may never have been sick. So I'm going to ask you to open yourself to the concept here. And that concept is come from the highest part of yourself. Now, how does that translate into functional reality? My show is about functional reality, not lofty rhetoric. What does this mean? Don't talk to them with low blood sugar. Don't talk to them when you're in a rush. Don't talk to them when you're on a telephone and you can't hear them. Don't talk with them when you haven't cleared out your schedule and you really don't have enough time. Don't talk to them when perhaps there are other people in the room who may take you out of your spiritual state. Hopefully they won't be sitting in hospitals. Hospitals are terrible places to have conversations. Yes, I understand sometimes it must be that way. But talking to someone and holding space, so this is a word I'm going to keep referring to, holding space for them out in the countryside overlooking a lake, it's very different than holding a space for them in the hospital next to the cafeteria with the stench of the cafeteria leaking into the room while you're sitting there talking to an old friend, a terminally ill friend, someone that you want to bring God to you in the moment. And the clanging of pots and pans and the stench of a filthy hospital is leaking in to the room. You get my point. Hold space for them in environments, in situations where you can give. You see, that's the thing. And the beauty of it is, if you hold space in that moment for them, the high part of them comes out. And it has a power over death. It has a power over chronic illness. It brings out the humor between two people. It brings out the authenticity between two people. And holding space is like a confession. Holding space is like the great climax in a great film. That's not what we understand normally. I deal with this all the time. Lots of people come in. Successful people, business people. People who are doing just fine and in their 50s, one day they find out something's wrong with their body. It's terrible to watch them go through the transitions they have to go through, their personal assistants, their loved ones, their clientels, their business colleagues. All this energy devoted to what do we do about this? It creates a secondary form of the illness. So the question becomes, how do you hold space? First of all, I hope you have a sense of this from my 46 shows or 47 shows, because disease is an imbalance. A disease is not a disease. You don't have to be a pathologist, an electron microscopist, to understand that disease is simply the soul not radiating through the physiology of the cell. That disease is really not more than the soul, the soul's intention, the soul's in expression, unable to radiate through the physiology, the biology of the cell. So the cell has to adapt under that demagnetized, uninspired state. And it no longer defends itself as successfully against the forces of evil. Parasites, infections, metals, prions, mycoplasma, nanobacteria, all these entities that derive from dark things. When the soul cannot express itself through its magnetic field into the tissue, you have a biological problem. And so these people you see, your loved ones who are sick, you have to look at them and understand some imbalance, some startling imbalance between their psyche, between their structure, between their toxicology, their nutrition, and between physical scars from physical traumas. Yes, that terminal cancer was often rooted in the breakage of bones from car accidents 20 or 30 years ago. That Parkinson's disease was rooted in an accident where your car rolled down the side of a hill and your neck was in a sling for 4 months, and your neck was never quite the same. Between imbalances in physical scarring, flexibility issues, chemical issues, and psychic issues. You ever notice a lot of people? You know this is true. A lot of people who leave us, left us before they died. Are you aware of that? Perhaps your eyes are not trained to see that. But certainly this is the case. I can vouch for that. Anybody in the field that works with people in the healing arts walks into situations where the person talking to you has quite obviously left this world long before they walked in. And I can tell you with a high degree of accuracy that in the end, one day, people turn around and say, oh, Mrs. So-and-so isn't here anymore. It came out of absolutely nowhere. People give signs all the time. Are you receptive to those signs? Can you see people waking up in the morning relentlessly with the relentless burden of not being able to come to terms with the fact that their dreams did not come true? What they had imagined their life to be in high school during puppy love is not in their seniorship the way it worked out, and they cannot get over it. There's no judgment here. This is simply an observation of a clinician asking you to understand the conclusion, which is lots of people leave us before they get sick. So this is imbalance in the psycho-structural biochemical scar tissue realm. That's what you're looking at when you're looking at illness. So why do you have to bury your nervous system? Why do you have to create anxiety? Why does the patient have to create anxiety in themselves and destroy the reality of an illness with these misnomers, these misdirections that we call the disease? Cancer, lupus, scleroderma, rheumatoid arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, suppurative ulcerative colitis, leukemia, so on and so forth. These words that don't reflect anything more than imbalances in those dimensions. Lighten your burden the next time you have to hold space for someone who's dying. And understand, their psyche may have checked out. And it's time for them to transmit. Perhaps their freedom will be found closer to God. And that's what's going on. Perhaps it's the cleanse they didn't do that's causing this sustenance of this illness, and so on and so forth. So holding space, this concept of holding space, very important to get that one down. Focusing on their illness and finding ways to stay on the other side of that focus, outside the focus on the illness, understanding that the illness isn't illness, it's just the cell adapting to a new terrain. In the right environment allows you to hold space and come to a spiritual moment with your friend or your coworker, so on and so forth. Now, other angles. Remember I did the show on the 99-year-old woman? She was failing. She was in trouble. She's no longer in trouble. They found, under my guidance, through completely professional services, help. Help from the country of Guatemala. The good Guatemalan people, the good El Salvadorian people. There are people coming to America, legal, working with green cards, etc., who work for agencies. We all know these agencies. You have to be discreet. You have to discern. But if you have a loved one that's down, there's a whole other art that I want to get into a little bit. A whole other art at finding their spiritual companion. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, when grandma's got to be walked to the bathroom, and grandma's got to be turned over at night, and a loved one's got to be fed, and when they vomit on themselves, they have to be leaned to the side so they don't choke on their vomit. All the things that exhaust the husband or the wife or the kids that go on for days, weeks, months, years, go out and get help. And do not let the person in the bed resist you. Get them into their high state. Get them to understand your suffering with their illness. And get them to take appropriate steps to find. God will provide. If you look, God will provide. Just that person that comes out of absolutely nowhere, perhaps from a country you never heard of. All legal, all copacetic, all professional. Someone that just happens to show up at the right time. You know, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. Well, not exactly the same thing, but when the patient, when the illness is ready, the companion will appear. And I've seen these things happen time and time again. We just did it with the 99-year-old lady. And we went through two or three people who were horrid. And we sent them packing and on their way. And they had all their little tricks to hide the fact that they weren't doing their job with love. But they could not succeed. It was clear they did not have passion for their job. It's not that type of outside companionship that your convalescing loved one refuses. It's the agony, the humility of having someone from some place they've never heard of sit with them and instead of giving ministry, treat them like pieces of meat. And when you're that sick, who's got the energy to snitch? Who's got the energy to really turn to the family and say, this person doesn't have their soul in it, and there's little things they do. When your back is turned, they're moving my head across the bed like I'm a dog. This is Straight Talk on Health. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. You're going to get it straight. If you have the guts to listen, then you'll prosper. This is what happens to our sick and convalescent. They either infinitely exhaust the people around them because nobody understands how to handle this, or we go to outside agencies and then people come in and they abuse our loved ones behind our backs with all sorts of little subtle ways. And yet out there, if you discern, if you look for people who have passion for what they do, being with some older person or younger person or whoever that is terminally ill is a calling. There's an artistry to it. There's a loving to it. And people that, in my experience, and we just did this, I've done this a number of times, who come to the home, and where do you get them from? You get them from everywhere. Everywhere. Churches provide them. Agencies provide them. The local bingo game provides them. God provides them. It's your attitude that provides them. It's your perspective that provides them. It's reaching out to the stars and putting this out there that provides them. And when they appear, you'll know it, and a relationship will develop. A relationship between the convalescing person and the help you provide that helps you get to work on time, that gives you more time with your kids, that gives you a better side to yourself when you're working with the person you love who's terminally ill. Because a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years into taking care of someone that's terminally ill, any one of you listening that have ever been through this know what I'm talking about. Sometimes it's quick. 6 months to 9 months. Sometimes it's years. There's all sorts of variations on this theme that need perspective. People fight their illnesses. Difficult to work with people who fight their illnesses. If somebody's chronically ill, again, keep in mind, I'm making distinction sometimes between chronically ill, meaning you're very sick, but you're not going to die soon, and terminally ill, which is you're very sick and you're going to die soon to be reborn. But nonetheless, in the process, it's heavy. It's heavy. How heavy does it have to be? How can we frame this so we don't get sick? You see? We're too virtuous a society to take sick people we love and just dump them into homes and forget about them. Let the home take care of it. We'll just come in and visit once a week. That's not you. That's not the audience I'm talking to. You're going to hang in there. You're going to sit by their bedside. And you're going to suffer as much as they are. That's why you're beautiful. But can we make this a little easier? Can we use our intelligence, our creative intelligence, to understand the dynamics? People fight their illnesses. They fight their illnesses. If you're chronically ill, you know your biggest problem? You're looking at it like it's a detour. This darn illness, where did this come from? This shouldn't have happened to me. I'm just getting it going and God just did this to me. That's what people do. I can't help them, neither can you. If you're locked into a relationship with someone like that, right, they wear the happy face at church. They put on the mask. But at home, oh my God. At home, it's a different story. They're not letting it go. They're just going to blab and fight and scream and everything that goes with it. And you got to take it because you love them. And if they suffer, you got to suffer. That's the deal. It's the arrangement. If it's a mom or a dad, well, there's four brothers. Is the brother that you are the one that got stuck with it? Or the sister? I shouldn't say never, but I hardly ever see the responsibility of dealing with a parent on the shoulder of on all of the siblings. It's always one sibling. You have a family that really, with equanimity, approaches something like this, you did good. But 9.9 times out of 10, in a family of four, it's one that has to take care of the parent. Often the youngest one or the oldest one. See, that's the rational perspective. The youngest one has always been sort of given it. Just keep passing it down. And there's no one younger than you. So it's you. Youngest ones often end up being the caretakers in the family. Or then there's the oldest one. And the oldest one from the beginning has been in charge. When mom had to leave to go to work or to get out for an hour or two so she didn't lose her mind, the oldest one got the job. So now the oldest one gets the job. So you guys in the middle there, you guys get away with it very, very often. But here's the point. The point is, whether you're a husband or a wife doing this for a husband or a wife, or a daughter or a son doing this for a parent, or whatever your arrangement is, if the person you're helping who's chronically ill is the person who continually fights their illness, your job is to get them into a perspective that won't allow them to do that. Now, that's more easily said than done. That's more easily said than done. This is why fighting the illness, if you're talking about getting on the other side of the illness, is the beautiful fight. In that sense, fighting the illness is good. So perhaps I should rephrase. When someone with a chronic illness has totally succumbed to the future of living with that for the rest of their life, they may be very embittered. And for you to have to share that bitterness suggests that there's another perspective, something that you can do, a perspective that you can provide, a perspective perhaps that you can demand. This is so important. I've seen people with needless, unnecessary back pain, just back pain from failed surgeries, suffer their entire lives, abusing family members because they're angry because this back pain ruined their life. I've seen chronic pain. Many of you perhaps have no concept of what happens when you don't sleep for a week or 2 weeks or a month because of some sort of physical pain. These are serious things. But you know, the uncanny part, and this is another little side note here, lots of people want to tell you, you don't understand how much pain I'm in. This is the other side of the coin. Lots of pain doesn't present itself on a person's surface. Not every illness, not every debilitating chronic illness allows you a visual of it. When you have Parkinson's disease and you shake and strut, well, that's a visual expression. People know you have it. That's another bit of counsel I just gave earlier. When you have Alzheimer's and you're looking at somebody that you've worked with for 30 years and you don't know who they are, it's quite obvious what's going on. But there are so many types of aches and pains and chronic illnesses and terminal illnesses that take a while, and you're never going to know people have them. And inside, they know they have them. And when they go home, it's time to unload. Or to people that are closer to them, it's time to unload. And there's a perspective they need to have. And that perspective offers them an exercise, a ritual, a day-to-day process into which they can address their illness, to do something for themselves, to assume an autonomy, to assume a responsibility. Or they will sit there and they will remain embittered. Because if this illness is a detour, it shouldn't have happened. And that's where they fixate. And lots of people stay sick forever because they fixate. Again, this is not a show about dogma. Again, I can't tell you this is you necessarily. You have to decide if this is you. There are illnesses, and I don't know where they come from sometimes, that take you in the darkness of the night, quickly, rapidly, and in agony. And sometimes I wonder where that comes from. And some of these perspectives today don't apply. But many of you, the majority of you, have chronic repetitive illness that you can do so much about. And you may be taking care of someone like that. Someone who can't make their own food. Someone who can't drive to the stores. Someone who can't mow their lawn. Somebody who can't move their bed to another part of the room. And you may be engaged in a constant, consistent expression and appropriation of your own precious energy to help these people. And inside themselves, they're just pissed off. Excuse me, I can't say that. I'm sorry. They're just angry that they can't get on the other side of this idea that they got sick in the first place. This is where holistic medicine is so wonderful, because you can do so much for yourself. You can bring them perspectives. You can put the ball in their court. What we don't like, what's so painful for us to accept, is loss of control. Somebody's sick or dying and we can't do anything about it. Well, you can. You can do much about it. And if they've drank the Kool-Aid and they don't feel they can do anything about it but focus on their detour, not understanding that this could be the beginning of a renewed perspective in life, then your relationship with them has to be amended. Because there's always a way out. One way or the other, there's a way out. And if you insist on doing it alone, if they insist on doing it alone, they're going to spin and spin and spin and spin. And this is where people live. They live in this mindset that my illness is a detour and it shouldn't have happened. And then they go out and they seek counsel. But they're like little groundhogs crawling out of their hole. They come out very cautiously, with no declaration, no commitment, no sense of propriety, no real faith. They just crawl out looking very, very skeptically at what's going to befall them, that they just might take a chance and take a step and not curse the darkness but light the candle. And they just crawl out, and the minute they hit the reality of what it takes to heal, which you should be no stranger to after 47 shows, they crawl back in and they say, you see, I tried. This stuff doesn't work. There's nothing I can do. And why did this happen to me? And we're back where we started. And people spin and they spin and they spin. What they don't make is relationship. And this is the primary problem. We're not understanding death, dying, disease as driven by. Its success is driven by relationship. We run from relationship because relationships can be painful. Because relationships are tests of faith. So what does somebody who uses nutrition have to say about these subjects? Well, it should be very obvious. You can't help people. You can't help people do anything with their health and not be deeply involved with these topics. Because your job is to create an authentic relationship. And that is always an act of faith. So once again, it comes down to faith. Faith heals. If you know nothing, faith heals. A moment about the life of Christ. It's appropriate. I saw and see a man who had it all. He had everything. He was brilliant. He was beautiful. He was respected. He was a charismatic. He was Christ. And Christ walked the earth, bringing people closer to God, his Father. And as he succeeded, the jealousies grew and developed, and he began to suffer. He suffered all the way to the agony in the garden. And this agony in the garden, the night before he was duly crucified, from jealousy, conceit, hatred. This night where he agonized in the garden, what did he do? He did what sick people do. What sick people do. Sick people often look up to God the Father and say, why me? Why do I have to suffer? So here we have a man who looks up to his Father in heaven and says, why do I have to suffer like this? I'm Christ. I've helped. I've influenced. I've cured. I've done miracles. And people attack me. And they hate me. And now they want to make me suffer more. I don't have to do this. I can remedy this situation tomorrow. I'm God. I'm Christ. I can do something about this, but I have to suffer? This is a detour for me. And the answer there was is that he chose to be crucified. He made that choice so that people could understand that if you could get to the other side of your suffering, that if you could find the Christ, the God in yourself, that something wonderful could happen. And this is what people who are terminally ill, this is what people who are chronically ill are being asked to consider. That their suffering is not a detour. It's their story. They're being initiated into what it takes to transform themselves from the flesh into pure spirit, so that they can take joy in that transformation. Now that's what it is for me. That's how I look at it. We suffer for a reason, many of us. And again, I can't explain and I can't understand some people's sufferings, but I can understand many of them. Many people suffer when they simply have to get perspective. That in the end, when people look back at the suffering, they turn around and say, you know, at the end, I couldn't see this in the beginning, but that suffering was a blessing. My disease was a blessing. My disease changed my life. My disease brought me bounty and prosperity. And that's the way you have to think. You have to fight the fight. This is not rhetoric. It's not dogma. It's not rhetoric. It's truly the way you're supposed to think. Or you can't activate. The herbs won't work then. The stretches don't succeed. You stop making choices. If you don't ask God into yourself when you're sick, then he can't go there. And you can't be bestowed the gifts. you can't engage in a ministry of healing unless you're open to your health as an opportunity to receive the ministry of healing. These are very important concepts. And when you look back on your life, as you do, as we all do, I think most of us start counting the years after 40, right? Certainly, when you're 50, you start counting. I was talking to a woman the other day, and she asked me, what would I do differently at 50? What would I have done differently? And I told her, not a thing. I wouldn't have made one choice I made differently, and I truly mean that. But one thing I definitely would have done differently, thought differently, I would have spent much less time doubting myself. Because it's the doubt that destroys you. Every moment where you lacked faith is what you'll regret. If you lack enough faith, you don't even make the right choice. You can make good choices, choices you don't regret. I don't regret any of my choices. Perhaps neither do you. But the bottom line is that those choices were evolved with a certain amount of faith and a certain amount of omission of faith. And that's what you regret in the end. And a couple of things you'll regret as you leave is that you didn't fight. For you, the sick, for the families around you, there is a dignity that's bestowed upon you when you make the choices to deal with all the things you have to deal with. And it's tough. It's tough. And I've seen people give up hundreds and thousands of dollars. I've seen people give up parts of their health. I've seen families split apart around the illnesses and deaths of loved ones. I've seen husbands and wives divorce. I think I've seen all there is to see, but of course I haven't, and I know that. But nonetheless, if you approach it with perspective, you will all come to the other side of it with a special dignity. And that special dignity will teach your children, and you and anyone that participated in you will go to death's door. The next journey, the next illness, with a greater degree of skill. We are a nation that has to start to elevate our consciousness about what it is to age, what it is to be sick, and what it is to die. You want to know why? Most of all, because the demographics will tell us that more of us are older. The exciting thing about American culture today is it's no longer defined by 20-year-olds. It's not. The baby boomer generations have come to roost. Japan is dealing with this. Statistically, Japan, the nation of Japan, has the oldest, the largest percentage of people over 60 years old in the world. There are lots of old people there. It's the way the baby boomer generation went for them. Ours in America is coming to roost. And we no longer have family structures that are the same. At 60 years old, you're not a grandmother in the sense that you've lost your youth. 60-year-old women and men want to feel young. They want to be looked at like they're young, and they want their second childhood. And with the economics as it is today, they're going to need their second childhood. Unlikely Social Security, if it even survives, will mean anything. Pension plans have changed. The whole scope of what we call the United States of America is transforming, and we're going to be left over this next two decades with lots of older, sick people. We need perspective. This is perspective. This is true perspective, born out of watching dozens and dozens and dozens of people get bad news. That may be good news in disguise, but not all the time. So where do we go at 60 years old, and how do we look at aging, and how do we look at disease, And can't we understand it? That all the things, all the arrogances, all the lack of humility, all the lack of faith, all the indiscretions that we brought to the prior 50 or 60 years have an opportunity to transform. I love working with people 60, 65, 70 that are ready to make that transformation. They become so beautiful. Their skin bathes in oil. Their hair gets thicker. Their bodies get straighter. They can bring all the wisdom of their age to their newly restored, regenerated bodies. But they're already spiritually. This is where anti-aging medicine is such a joke. It is such a pathetic joke. Synthetic human growth hormone. Who do we think we are? Who do we think we are? You're going to pump a synthetic hormone into the pituitary of your brain and not think there are going to be serious dues to pay, all in the name of anti-aging? You know the Star Club. Their phony facelifts, scarring their meridian systems, and then the inclusion of all sorts of gimmicks, synthetic hormones into their body. It's bad in the end. It's not what the media tells you. It's not what the advertising media tells you. Yes, if you're starving to death, as many Americans are, you can get pumped up with some sort of a synthetic and in a week or two feel better. And then we can just magnify that and exaggerate it until tomorrow's miracle. We can forego. We can work at the exclusion of the real fundamental healing. And we can act like these quick fixes are the next best thing since 7-Up, as they say. But it's a lie. And we're lying. And our young are scared of aging. And when people hit 50 or 60, they hit the wall, the hormonal wall. Men don't get their erections. Women are dry. And they want to be young. And their hair thins out. And they've been afraid of this moment. They thought it would never happen to them. And then we add an illness to it. We have a glamorous glitz culture. We drank the Kool-Aid on Park Avenue. And then reality sets in. And so what does much of our culture do? It takes older people and it shoves them under a rug. You don't count anymore. You should just stay in the house and watch TV at night. Well, you see, the beautiful part of this, the good news is this can't happen anymore because the demographics are such that everybody's older. You have scores of people in their 60s. They don't think of themselves as old, and they shouldn't. But we have perspectives that are still lingering. And these perspectives have to change. Wow. We hit it all. I think this is the heaviest show I've ever done, but it's got a good ending. It certainly does have a good ending because you can heal. Not a lot of people heal. That's the truth. They don't. They mitigate their symptoms. They play around with them. They spin in circles, but they can. But you hardly see anybody ever fail when they really go at it correctly. So there's a real, real lack of education. Even when there's faith, there's a lack of education. Or vice versa. Again, it's like making a birthday cake. You've got to put the right ingredients in the right ratios, understand how to bake the cake at the right temperatures, do everything right, and then you see the miracle of healing. And it is a miracle. The first thing we ought to understand is that it's not seen often enough, not a true rejuvenation. Mitigation of symptoms, that occurs. It's not hard to mitigate symptoms. It's not hard to make yourself a little better. And that's a great thing. But you see, working with people, people want to get back to where they were. They want to feel their youth again. And there's no reason at 60 or 70 or 80 years old you can't feel your youth. People that do this don't care that they have less hair. They don't care that they have more wrinkles. They don't care that there's been some justifiable loss of function in their body. They care that they feel young inside. They've passed through the ring of fire. Because getting older, that's a moment. That's a moment when you're no longer a boy. That's a moment when you're no longer a girl. That's a moment when you realize no one's going to mistake you for a kid anymore. And then you get sick on top of that. That's a moment that you have to embrace. That should be in the culture. The physical exams we get in the hospitals we go to every year should create an aging profile. And in that profile, someone that understands this stuff should be working with you. Should be working with you to see what your perspectives are. People come in all the time. Their hair is thin. They're flipped. Their sex drive has changed. They're flipped. Their toenails don't grow as fast anymore. I mean, I've heard everything. So many things that people put their energies on that don't really matter, but it comes from this type of culture. Okay, my school. We're running three schools simultaneously. Three. That's wonderful. $125 every 5 weeks. And you just get to learn. It's a learning tool. And the beautiful thing is that everybody's learning how much everybody has in common. That you're not alone. And that's the problem. You think you're alone. And when you seek health care from anybody, you're alone with you and your practitioner who's scared of you because they don't know you, and you're scared of them because you don't want to find anything out that's bad, nor do you want to be ripped off or lied to. And whether it's allopathic or holistic, that often happens. So when you bring a school to this, a community, the whole game changes. And we're doing this. You call 310-320-1132, 310-320-1132. You speak to Clem Alita. She runs the school and the offices. And you speak to her. And you come once, and you'll see you'll come back. Everybody has. They have because it's righteous. They have because it's a deal. They have because they find out that they're more human than they thought they were in relationship to other people. And collectively, we bring up the better side of all of us. And we've been doing that now since November. And it is succeeding. It is a model that works. And it's just education. There's no selling of anything. It's no buying of anything. It's just a transfer of information. It's to get perspective to you. And then you make your choices. You navigate your path. The Medici Library. If you go to the website, straighttalk.cc, I am building out a library for you. I have numerous libraries. I have books that are out of print. I have insights into these books that you need to hear, and I've created a 3D library, a true reality show, so to speak. It's not perfect yet. If you go on to the site, there's still problems. You know, these tech people, they work slow. You know? They work very slow in my experience. I've had dozens of them now in the last 3 years. But we're putting it together, and you're going to be able to pull a book off the shelf, open the book, see the paragraphs I thought in the book were dynamic, read little reviews below each of those paragraphs, and then you can decide somewhere along the line if you want that book. Or just read my version of it. That's straighttalk.cc. Straighttalk.cc, two T's. .cc, not .com. If you're listening on the radio, I'm going to make my weekly plea to you to get a computer. We have lots of good young people now that want to teach people over the age of 50 to use computers. And I understand the trials and tribulations of the transformation. But get a computer and get onto the website. Because you have to understand about the computer and about what it can do for you and not. And I think it's appropriate to get into this. Because to get to you, to perspectives I need to get you to, you need to get educated. And your version of the computer may be antiquated. And if it's not, you may have that other version of the computer. And that other misconception of the computer is that it brings you to understandings. Computers and what you gather from the internet and the data searches you do not bring you to understandings. You are not researching your illness or your disease on the internet. It doesn't happen that way. You're accumulating data. Research is the creative thought process that goes to allowing you to make smarter choices about yourself. Computers don't give you that. Internet searches don't really provide that. So you have to use the computer to get to the data. And then you have to use the data to do something that the computer doesn't teach you, and that's to think. And that's what the show is about. It's to get you to think. Because most people are dealing with problems that simply with a different perspective wouldn't occur anymore. Illness is not a detour. It's an opportunity for your soul to express itself through the chemistry of your cell. I'm going to say it one more time and then say goodbye. Illness is not a detour. It's an opportunity for your soul to express itself through the chemistry of your cell. God bless you, Dr. Vincent Medici, straighttalk.cc.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.